followed, looking up at Cam. He offered his elbow, ignoring Gabby and Penn entirely. "How about it, kid?" he asked, sounding so charmingly classic Hollywood that Luce forgot all about what had happened to Jules and Philip. "Sorry," Penn butted in, answering for both of them and steering Luce away by the elbow. "But we have other plans." Cam looked at Penn like he was trying to figure out where she'd come from all of a sudden. He had a way of making Luce feel like a better, cooler version of herself. And she had a way of crossing his path right after Daniel had made her feel exactly the opposite. But Gabby was still hovering beside him, and Penn's tug was growing stronger, so finally Luce just waved the hand still clutching Cam's gift. Maybe next time. Thanks for the necklace. Leaving Cam and Gabby confused in the classroom behind them, Penn and Luce booked it out of Augustine. It felt creepy to be alone in the dark building so late, and Luce could tell from the hurried slap of Penn's sandals on the stairs in front of her that she felt it, too. Outside, it was windy. An owl crooned in its palmetto tree. When they passed under the oaks alongside the building, straggly tendrils of Spanish moss brushed them like tangled strands of hair. "Maybe next time?" Penn mimicked Luce's voice. "What was that about?"
"Nothing. I don't know."
Luce wanted to change the subject. "You make us sound very posh, Penn," she said, laughing as they trudged along the commons. "Other plans. I thought you had fun at the party last week."
"If you'd ever get around to reading my recent correspondence, you'd see why we have more important things on our plate."
Luce emptied her pockets, rediscovered the 5 uneaten M&Ms, and shared them with Penn, who expressed a very Penn-like sentiment that she hoped they had come from a sanitary place, but ate them anyway. Luce unfolded the first of Penn's notes, which looked like a photocopied page from one of the files in the underground archive. Gabrielle Givens, Cameron Briel, Lucinda Price, Todd Hammond. Previous locations, all in the Northeast, except for T. Hammond, Orlando, Florida. Arian Alter, Daniel Grigori, Mary Margaret Zane. Previous locations, Los Angeles, California. Lucinda's group was noted as arriving at Sword and Cross on September 15 of this year. The second group had arrived March 15, 3 years earlier.
"Who's Mary Margaret Zane?" Luce asked, pointing.
"Only the very virtuous Molly," Penn said.
"Molly's name was Mary Margaret?"
"No wonder she's so pissed off at the world," Luce said. "So where'd you get all this?"
"I dug it out from one of the boxes Miss Sophia brought down the other day," Penn said. "That's Miss Sophia's handwriting."
Luce looked up at her.
"What does it mean? Why would she need to record this? I thought they had all our arrival dates separately in our files."
"They do. I can't figure it out either," Penn said. "And, I mean, even though you showed up at the same time as those other kids, it's not like you have anything in common with them."
"I couldn't have less in common with them," Luce said, envisioning the coy look Gabby always had glued to her face.
Penn scratched her chin.
"But when Arian, Molly, and Daniel showed up, they already knew each other. I think they came from the same halfway house in L.A.
Somewhere there was a key to Daniel's story. There had to be more to him than a halfway house in California. But thinking back to his reaction, that washed-out horror that Luce might take an interest in knowing anything about him, well, it made her feel like everything she and Penn were doing was futile and immature.
"What's the point of all of this?" Luce asked, suddenly annoyed.
"Why Miss Sophia would be collating all that information, I can't figure out. Though Miss Sophia arrived at Sword and Cross the same day as Arian, Daniel, and Molly..."
Penn trailed off.
"Who knows? Maybe it doesn't mean anything.
There's just so little mention of Daniel in the archives, I figured I'd show you everything I came up with. Hence Exhibit B."
She pointed toward the second note in Luce's hand. Luce sighed. Part of her wanted to quit the search and stop feeling embarrassed about Daniel.
The pushier part of her still yearned to get to know him better, which, strangely, was far easier to do when he wasn't technically present to give her new reasons to feel embarrassed. She looked down at the note, a photocopy of an old-fashioned card from a library catalog. Grigori, D. The Watchers, Myth in Medieval Europe. Seraphim Press, Rome, 1755. Call number R999.318-GRI. Sounds like one of Daniel's ancestors was a scholar, Penn said, reading over Luce's shoulder. This must have been what he meant, Luce said under her breath. She looked at Penn. He told me studying religion was in his family. This must be what he meant. I thought he was an orphan. Don't ask, Luce said, waving her off. Touchy subject with him. She ran her finger over the book's title. What's a watcher? Only one way to find out, Penn said. Though we may live to regret it, 'cause this sounds like possibly the most boring book ever. Still, she added, dusting her knuckles on her shirt, I took the liberty of checking the catalog. The book should be in the stacks. You can thank me later. You're good. Luce grinned. She was eager to get up to the library. If someone in Daniel's family had written a book, it couldn't possibly be boring. Or not to Luce, anyway. But then she looked down at the other thing still in her hand, the velvet jewelry box from Cam. What do you think this means? She asked Penn as they started walking up the mosaic-tiled stairs to the library. Penn shrugged. Your feelings on snakes are hatred, agony, extreme paranoia, and disgust, Luce listed. Maybe it's like, okay, I used to be scared of cactus. Couldn't go near 'em. Don't laugh. Have you ever pricked yourself on one of those things? They stay in your skin for days. Anyway, one year, for my birthday, my dad bought me like 11 cactus plants. At first I wanted to chuck them at him. But then, you know, I got used to them. I stopped flipping out any time I was near one. In the end, it totally worked. So you're saying Cam's gift, Luce said, is actually really sweet? I guess, Penn said. But if I'd known he had the hots for you, I would not have trusted him with our private correspondence. Sorry about that. He does not have the hots for me, Luce started to say, fingering the gold chain inside the box, imagining how it would look on her skin. She hadn't told Penn anything about her picnic with Cam because, well, she didn't really know why. It had to do with Daniel and how Luce still couldn't figure out where she stood or wanted to stand with either of them. Ha! Penn cackled. Which means you kinda like him. Cheating on Daniel. I can't keep up with you and your men. As if anything is going on with either of them, Luce said glumly. Do you think Cam read the notes? If he did and he still gave you that necklace, Penn said, then he's really into you. They stepped inside the library and the heavy double doors thudded behind them. The sound echoed through the room. Miss Sophia looked up from the mounds of paper covering her lamp-lit desk. Oh, hello, girls, she said, beaming so broadly that Luce felt guilty all over again for zoning out during her lecture. I hope you enjoyed my brief review session, she practically sang. Very much, Luce nodded, though there had been nothing brief about it. We came here to review a few more things before the exam. That's right, Penn chimed in. You inspired us. How wonderful. Miss Sophia rustled through her paperwork. I've got a further reading list somewhere. I'd be happy to make you a copy. Great, Penn lied, giving Luce a small push toward the stacks. We'll let you know if we need it. Beyond Miss Sophia's desk, the library was quiet. Luce and Penn eyed the call numbers as they passed shelf after shelf toward the books on religion. The energy-saving lights had motion detectors and were supposed to turn on as they crossed each aisle, but only about half of them worked. Luce realized that Penn was still holding onto her arm, then realized she didn't want her to let go. The girls came to the usually crowded study section where only one table lamp burned. Everyone else must have been at Gabby's party. Everyone except for Todd. He had his feet kicked up on the chair across from him and seemed to be reading a coffee-table-sized world atlas. When the girls walked by him, he looked up with a wan expression that was either very lonely or slightly annoyed at being disturbed.
"You guys are here late," he said flatly.
"So are you," Pen retorted, sticking out her tongue dramatically. When they'd put a few shelves between them and Todd, Luce raised an eyebrow at Pen.
"What was that?"
"What?" Pen sulked.
"He flirts with me."
She crossed her arms over her chest and blew a brown curlicue of hair out of her eyes.
"As if."
"Are you in fourth grade?" Luce teased. Pen stuck her pointer finger up at Luce with an intensity that would have made Luce jump if she hadn't been giggling so much.
"Do you know anyone else who would delve into Daniel Grigori's family history with you?"
"Didn't think so. Leave me alone." By then, they had reached the far back corner of the library, where all the 999 books were arranged along a single pewter-colored bookshelf. Pen crouched down and traced the book's spines with her finger. Luce felt a tremor, like someone was running a finger along her neck. She craned her head around and saw a wisp of gray. Not black, like the shadows usually were, but lighter, thinner, just as unwelcome. She watched, wide-eyed, as the shadow stretched out in a long, curling strand directly over Penn's head. It came down slowly, like a threaded needle, and Luce didn't want to think about what might happen if it touched her friend. The other day at the gym had been the first time the shadows had touched her, and she still felt violated, almost dirty from it. She didn't know what else they could do. Nervous, unsteady, Luce stretched her arm out like a baseball bat. She took a deep breath and swung forward. She bristled at the icy contact as she knocked the shadow away and clocked Pen upside the head. Pen pressed her hands against her skull and looked back at Luce in shock.
"What is wrong with you?"
Luce sank down next to her and smoothed the top of Pen's hair.
"I'm so sorry. I thought I saw a bee land on your head. I panicked. I didn't want it to sting you."
She could feel how utterly, utterly lame this excuse was, and waited for her friend to tell her she was crazy. What would a bee be doing in a library? She waited for Pen to walk out. But Pen's round face softened. She took Luce's hand in both of hers and shook it.
"Bees terrify me, too," she said. "I'm deathly allergic. You basically just saved my life."
It was like they were having a huge bonding moment, only they weren't, because Luce was wholly consumed by the shadows. If only there were a way to push them from her mind, to shrug the shadow thing off without shrugging off Pen. Luce had a strong, uneasy feeling about this light gray shadow. The uniformity of the shadows had never been comforting, but these latest variations were a new level of disconcerting. Did it mean more kinds of shadows were finding their way to her? Or was she just getting better at distinguishing them? And what about that weird moment during Miss Sophia's lecture when she'd actually pinched a shadow back before it could enter her pocket? She'd done it without thinking, and had had no reason to expect that her two fingers would be any match for a shadow. But they had been. She glanced around the stacks. At least, temporarily. She wondered whether she had set some kind of precedent for interacting with the shadows. Except that to call what she'd done to the shadow hovering over Penn's head interacting, even Luce knew that was a euphemism. A cold, sick feeling grew in her gut when she realized that what she'd started doing to the shadows was more like fighting them off.
"It's the strangest thing," Pen spoke up from the floor. "It should be right here between the Dictionary of Angels and this god-awful Billy Graham fire and brimstone thing." She looked up at Luce. "But it's gone."
"I thought you said..."
"I did. The computer had it listed as on the shelves when I looked this afternoon, but we can't get online this late to check again."
"Go ask Toto out there," Luce suggested. "Maybe he's using it as a cover for his Playboys."
"Gross.
Pen whacked her on the thigh. Luce knew she'd only made the joke to try to downplay her disappointment. It was just so frustrating. She couldn't find out anything about Daniel without running up against a wall. She didn't know what she'd find inside the pages of his great-great-whatever's book, but at least it would tell her something more about Daniel, which had to be better than nothing. "Stay here," Pen said, standing up. "I'm going to go ask Miss Sophia if anyone's checked it out today." Luce watched her traipse back up the long aisle toward the front desk. She laughed when Pen sped up to pass the area where Todd was sitting. Alone in the back corner, Luce fingered some of the other books on the shelves. She did a quick mental run-through of the student body at Sword and Cross, but she couldn't think of any likely candidates for checking out an old religious book. Maybe Miss Sophia had used it as a reference for her review session earlier. Luce wondered what it must have been like for Daniel to sit there, listening to the librarian talk about things that had probably been dinner table topics of conversation when he was growing up. Luce wanted to know what his childhood had been like. What had happened to his family? Had his upbringing at the orphanage been religious? Or was his childhood anything like hers, in which the only things pursued religiously were good grades and academic honors? She wanted to know whether Daniel had ever read this book by his ancestor, and what he'd thought about it, and if he liked writing himself. She wanted to know what he was doing right now at Gabby's party, and when his birthday was, and what size shoe he wore, and whether he ever wasted a single second of his time wondering about her. Luce shook her head. This train of thought was heading straight for Pity City, and she wanted to get off. She pulled the first book off the shelf, the very unfascinating cloth-covered Dictionary of Angels, and decided to distract herself by reading until Pen came back. She'd gotten as far as the fallen angel Abaddon, who regretted siding with Satan and constantly bemoaned his bad decision, yawn, when a blaring noise rang out over her head. Luce looked up to see the red flash of the fire alarm. "Alert! Alert!" a monotone robotic voice announced over a loudspeaker. "The fire alarm has been activated. Evacuate the building." Luce slid the book back on the shelf and pulled herself to her feet. They'd done this kind of thing at Dover all the time. After a while, it had reached the point where not even the teachers had heeded the monthly fire drills, so the fire department started really setting off the alarm just to get people to respond. Luce could totally see the administrators at Sword and Cross pulling a similar stunt. But when she started walking toward the exit, she was surprised to find herself coughing. There was actual smoke inside the library. "Pen?" she called out, hearing her voice echo in her ears. She knew she'd be drowned out by the piercing shriek of the alarm. The acrid smell of the smoke dropped her instantly back into the blaze that night with Trevor. Images and sounds flooded her mind, things she'd stuffed so deep inside her memory they might as well have been obliterated. Until now. The shocking whites of Trevor's eyes against the orange glow. The individual tendrils of flame as the fire spread through each one of his fingers. The shrill, unending scream that rang in her head like a siren long after Trevor had given up. And the whole time she'd stood there, watching. She couldn't stop watching, frozen in that bath of heat. She hadn't been able to move. She hadn't been able to do a thing to help him. So he'd died. She felt a hand grip her left wrist and spun around, expecting to see Pen. It was Todd. The whites of his own eyes were huge, and he was coughing, too. "We have to get out of here," he said, breathing fast. "I think there's an exit toward the back."
"What about Pen and Miss Sophia?" Luce asked.
She was feeling weak and dizzy. She rubbed her eyes. "They were over there." When she pointed up the aisle toward the entrance, she could see how much thicker the smoke was in that direction. Todd looked doubtful for a second, but then he nodded.
"Okay," he said, keeping hold of her wrist as they crouched down and sprinted toward the front doors of the library.
They took a right when one aisle looked particularly thick with smoke, then found themselves facing a wall of books without a clue which way to run. Both of them stopped to gasp. The smoke that only a moment earlier had hovered just above their heads now pressed low against their shoulders. Even ducking below it, they were choking, and they couldn't see as much as a few feet in front of them. Making sure to keep a hold on Todd, Lou spun around in a circle, suddenly unsure which direction they'd come from. She reached out and felt the hot metal shelf of one of the stacks. She couldn't even make out the letters on the spines. Were they in the D section or the O's? There were no clues to guide them toward Penn and Miss Sophia, and no clues to guide them to the exit, either. Luce felt a surge of panic course through her, making it even more difficult to breathe.
"They must have already gone out the front doors," Todd shouted, sounding only half convinced. "We have to turn back."
Luce bit her lip. If anything happened to Penn... She could barely see Todd, who was standing right in front of her. He was right, but which way was back? Luce nodded mutely and felt his hand tugging hers. For a long time she moved without knowing where they were going, but as they ran, the smoke lifted, little by little, until, eventually, she saw the red glow of an emergency exit sign. Luce breathed a sigh of relief as Todd fumbled for the door handle and finally pushed it open. They were in a hallway Luce had never seen before. Todd slammed the door shut behind them. They gasped and filled their lungs with clean air. It tasted so good, Luce wanted to sink her teeth into it, to drink a gallon of it, bathe herself in it. She and Todd both coughed the smoke out of their lungs until they started laughing, an uneasy, only half-relieved laugh. They laughed until she was crying. But even when Luce finished crying and coughing, her eyes continued to tear. How could she breathe in this air when she didn't even know what had happened to Penn? If Penn hadn't made it out, if she was collapsed somewhere inside, then Luce had failed someone she cared about again. Only this time, it would be so much worse. She wiped her eyes and watched a puff of smoke curl out from underneath the crack at the base of the door. They weren't safe yet. There was another door at the end of the hallway. Through the glass panel in the door, Luce could see the wobble of a tree branch in the night. She exhaled. In a few moments, they'd be outside, away from these choking fumes. If they were fast enough, they could go around to the front entrance and make sure Penn and Miss Sophia had made it out okay.
"Come on," Luce told Todd, who was folded over himself, wheezing. "We have to keep going."
He straightened up, but Luce could see he was really overcome. His face was red, his eyes were wild and wet. She practically had to drag him toward the door. She was so focused on getting out that it took her too long to process the heavy, swishing noise that had fallen over them, drowning out the alarms. She looked up into a maelstrom of shadows, a spectrum of shades of gray and deepest black. She should only be able to see as far as the ceiling overhead, but the shadows seemed somehow to extend beyond its limits, into a strange and hidden sky. They were all tangled up in each other, and yet they were distinct. Amid them was the lighter, grayish one she'd seen earlier. It was no longer shaped like a needle, but now looked almost like the flame of a match. It bobbed over them in the hallway. Had she really fended off that amorphous darkness when it threatened to graze Penn's head? The memory made her palms itch and her toes curl. Todd started banging on the walls as if the hallway were closing in on them. Luce knew they were nowhere near the door. She grabbed for his hand, but their sweaty palms slid off each other. She wrapped her fingers tight around his wrist. He was white as a ghost, crouched down near the floor, almost cowering. A terrified moan escaped his lips. Because the smoke was now filling up the hallway? Or because he could sense the shadows, too? Impossible. And yet his face was pinched and horrified, much more so now that the shadows were overhead.
"Luce?"
His voice shook. Another horde of shadows rose up directly in their path. A deep black blanket of dark spread out across the walls and made it impossible for Luce to see the door. She looked at Todd. Could he see it?
"Run!" she yelled. Could he even run? His face was ashy and his eyelids drooped shut. He was on the verge of passing out. But then it suddenly seemed like he was carrying her, or something was carrying both of them.
"What the hell?" Todd cried out.
Their feet skimmed the floor for just a moment. It felt like riding a wave in the ocean, a light crest that lifted her higher, filling her body with air. Luce didn't know where she was headed. She couldn't even see the door, just a snarl of inky shadows all around, hovering but not touching her. She should have been terrified, but she wasn't. Somehow she felt protected from the shadows, like something was shielding her, something fluid but impenetrable, something uncannily familiar, something strong but also gentle, something... Almost too quickly, she and Todd were at the door. Her feet hit the floor again, and she shoved herself against the door's emergency exit bar. Then she heaved, choked, gasped, gagged. Another alarm was clanging, but it sounded far away. The wind whipped at her neck. They were outside, standing on a small ledge. A flight of stairs led down to the commons, and even though everything in her head felt cloudy and filled with smoke, Luce thought she could hear voices somewhere nearby. She turned back to try to figure out what had just happened. How had she and Todd made it through that thickest, blackest, impenetrable shadow? And what was the thing that had saved them? Luce felt its absence. She almost wanted to go back and search for it. But the hallway was dark, and her eyes were still watering, and she couldn't make out the twisting shadow shapes anymore. Maybe they were gone. Then there was a jagged stroke of light, something that looked like a tree trunk with branches. No, like a torso with long, broad limbs. A pulsing, almost violet column of light hovering over them. It made Luce think, absurdly, of Daniel. She was seeing things. She took a deep breath and tried to blink the smoky tears from her eyes. But the light was still there. She sensed more than heard it call to her, calming her, a lullaby in the middle of a war zone. So she didn't see the shadow coming. It body-slammed into her and Todd, breaking their grip on each other and tossing Luce into the air. She landed in a heap at the foot of the stairs. An agonized grunt escaped her lips. For one long moment, her head throbbed. She'd never known pain as deep and searing as this. She cried out into the night, into the clash of light and shadow overhead. But then it all became too much, and Luce surrendered, closing her eyes.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Fallen by Lauren Kate, read for you by Justine Eyre. 11. Rude Awakening.
Are you scared?
Daniel asked. His head was tilted sideways, his blonde hair disheveled by a soft breeze. He was holding her. And while his grip was firm around her waist, it was as smooth and light as a silk sash. Her own fingers were laced behind his shirtless neck. Was she scared? Of course not. She was with Daniel, finally, in his arms. The truer question pulling at the back of her mind was, should she be scared? She couldn't be sure. She didn't even know where she was. She could smell rain in the air close by. But both she and Daniel were dry. She could feel a long white dress flowing down to her ankles. There was only a little light left in the day. Luce felt a stabbing regret at wasting the sunset, as if there were anything she could do to stop it. Somehow, she knew these final rays of light were as precious as the last drops of honey in a jar. "Will you stay with me?" she asked. Her voice was the thinnest whisper, almost canceled out by a low groan of thunder. A gust of wind swirled around them, brushing Luce's hair into her eyes. Daniel folded his arms more tightly around her until she could breathe in his breath, could smell his skin on hers.
"Forever," he whispered back.
The sweet sound of his voice filled her up. There was a small scratch on the left side of his forehead, but she forgot it as Daniel cupped her cheek and brought her face nearer. She tilted her head back and felt the whole of her body go slack with expectation. Finally, finally, his lips came down on hers with an urgency that took her breath away. He kissed her as if she belonged to him, as naturally as if she were some long-lost part of him that he could at last reclaim. Then the rain started to fall. It soaked their hair, ran down their faces and into their mouths. The rain was warm and intoxicating, like the kisses themselves. Luce reached around his back to draw him closer, and her hand slid over something velvety. She ran one hand over it, then another, searching for its limits, and then peered past Daniel's glowing face. Something was unfurling behind him. Wings. Lustrous and iridescent, beating slowly, effortlessly, shining in the rain. She'd seen them before, maybe, or something like them somewhere. "Daniel," she said, gasping. The wings consumed her vision and her mind. They seemed to swirl into a million colors, making her head hurt. She tried to look elsewhere, anywhere else, but on all sides, all she could see besides Daniel were the endless pinks and blues of the sunset sky. Until she looked down and took in one last thing. The ground. Thousands of feet below them. When she opened her eyes, it was too bright, her skin was too dry, and there was a splitting pain at the back of her head. The sky was gone, and so was Daniel. Another dream. Only this one left her feeling almost sick with desire. She was in a white-walled room, lying on a hospital bed. To her left, a paper-thin curtain had been dragged halfway across the room, separating her from something bustling on the other side. Luce gingerly touched the tender spot at the base of her neck and whimpered. She tried to get her bearings. She didn't know where she was, but she had a distinct feeling that she wasn't at Sword and Cross any longer. Her billowy white dress was, she patted her sides, a baggy hospital gown. She could feel every part of the dream slipping away, everything but those wings. They'd been so real, the touch of them so velvety and fluid. Her stomach churned. She clenched and unclenched her fists, hyper-aware of their emptiness. Someone grasped and squeezed her right hand. Luce turned her head quickly and winced. She'd assumed she was alone. Gabby was perched on the edge of a faded blue rolling chair that seemed, annoyingly, to bring out the color of her eyes. Luce wanted to pull away, or at least she expected to want to pull away. But then Gabby gave her the warmest smile, one that made Luce feel somehow safe, and she realized she was glad she wasn't alone. "How much of it was a dream?" she murmured. Gabby laughed. She had a pot of cuticle cream on the table next to her, and she began rubbing the white, lemon-scented stuff into Luce's nail beds. "That all depends," she said, massaging Luce's fingers. "But never mind dreams. I know that whenever I feel my world turning upside down, nothing grounds me like a manicure." Luce glanced down. She'd never been much for nail polish herself, but Gabby's words reminded her of her mother, who was always suggesting they go for manicures whenever Luce had a bad day. As Gabby's slow hands worked over her fingers, Luce wondered whether all these years she'd been missing out. "Where are we?" she asked.
"Lell Water Hospital."
Her first trip off campus, and she ended up in a hospital 5 minutes from her parents' house. The last time she'd been here was to get 3 stitches on her elbow when she'd fallen off her bike. Her father hadn't left her side. Now he was nowhere to be seen. "How long have I been here?" she asked. Gabby looked at a white clock on the wall and said, "They found you passed out from smoke inhalation last night, around 11. It's standard operating procedure to call for EMTs when they find a reform kid unconscious. But don't worry,
Randy said they're going to let you out of here pretty soon, as soon as your parents give the okay.
My parents are here?
And filled with concern for their daughter, right down to the split ends of your mama's permed hair. They're in the hallway, drowning in paperwork. I told them I'd keep an eye on you.
Luce groaned and pressed her face into the pillow, calling up the deep pain at the back of her head again.
If you don't want to see them.
But Luce wasn't groaning about her parents. She was dying to see her parents. She was remembering the library, the fire, and the new breed of shadows that grew more terrifying every time they found her. They'd always been dark and unsightly. They'd always made her nervous. But last night, it had almost seemed as if the shadows wanted something from her. And then there was that other thing, the levitating force that had set her free.
"What's that look?" Gabby asked, cocking her head and waving her hand in the air in front of Luce's face. "What are you thinking about?"
Luce didn't know what to make of Gabby's sudden kindness toward her. Nurse's assistant didn't exactly seem like the kind of gig Gabby would volunteer for, and it wasn't like there were any guys around whose attention she could monopolize. Gabby didn't even seem to like Luce. She wouldn't just show up here of her own accord, would she? But even as nice as Gabby was being, there was no way to explain what had happened last night. The grisly, unspeakable gathering in the hallway. The surreal sensation of being propelled forward through that blackness. The strange, compelling figure of light.
"Where's Todd?" Luce asked, remembering the boy's fearful eyes. She'd lost her grip on him, gone flying, and then...
The paper curtain was suddenly slung back, and there was Arion, wearing inline skates and a red-and-white candy striper uniform. Her short black hair was twisted up in a series of knots on top of her head. She rolled in, carrying a tray on which sat three coconut shells, topped with neon-colored umbrella party straws.
"Now lemme get this straight," she said, in a throaty, nasal voice. "You put the lime in the coconut and drink 'em both up."
"Whoa, long faces. What am I interrupting?"
Arion wheeled to a stop at the foot of Luce's bed. She extended a coconut with a bobbing pink umbrella. Gabby jumped up and seized the coconut first, giving its contents a sniff.
"Arion, she's just been through a trauma," she scolded.
"And for your information, what you interrupted was the topic of Todd."
Arion tossed her shoulders back.
"Precisely why she needs something with a kick," she argued, holding the tray possessively while she and Gabby engaged in a stare-down.
"Fine," Arion said, looking away from Gabby. "I'll give her your boring old drink."
She gave Luce the coconut with the blue straw.
Luce must have been in some kind of post-traumatic daze. Where would they have gotten any of this stuff? Coconut shells? Drink umbrellas? It was like she'd been conked out at reform school and woken up at Club Med.
"Where did you guys get all this stuff?" she asked.
"I mean, thank you, but..."
"We pool our resources when we need to," Arion said. "Roland helped."
The three of them sat slurping the frosty sweet drinks for a moment until Luce couldn't take it anymore.
"So back to Todd."
"Todd," Gabby said, clearing her throat.
"Thing is, he just inhaled a lot more of that smoke than you did, honey."
"He did not," Arion spat. "He broke his neck."
Luce gasped, and Gabby hit Arion with her drink umbrella.
"What?" Arion said. "Luce can handle it. If she's going to find out eventually, why sugarcoat it?"
"The evidence is still inconclusive," Gabby said, stressing the words.
Arion shrugged.
"Luce was there. She must have seen."
"I didn't see what happened to him," Luce said. "We were together, and then somehow we were thrown apart. I had a bad feeling, but I didn't know," she whispered.
"So he's..."
"Gone from this world," Gabby said softly.
Luce closed her eyes. A chill spread through her that had nothing to do with the drink. She remembered Todd's frenzied banging on the walls, his sweaty hand squeezing hers when the shadows roared down on them, the awful moment when the two of them had been split apart and she'd been too overcome to go to him. He'd seen the shadows. Luce was certain of it now. And he'd died. After Trevor died, not a week had gone by without a hate letter finding its way to Luce. Her parents started trying to vet the mail before she could read the poisonous stuff, but too much still reached her. Some letters were handwritten, some were typed. One had even been cut from magazine letters, ransom note style. Murderer. Witch. They'd called her enough cruel names to fill a scrapbook, caused enough agony to keep her locked inside the house all summer. She thought she'd done so much to move on from that nightmare, leaving her past behind when she came to Sword and Cross, focusing on her classes, making friends. Oh, God. She sucked in her breath. "What about Pen?" she asked, biting her lip. "Pen's fine," Arion said. "She's all front-page story, eyewitness to the fire." She and Miss Sophia both got out, smelling like an East Georgia smoke pit, but no worse for the wear. Luce let out her breath. At least there was one piece of good news. But under the paper-thin infirmary sheets, she was trembling. Soon, surely the same types of people who'd come to her after Trevor's death would come to her again. Not just the ones who wrote the angry letters. Dr. Sanford, her parole officer, the police. Just like before, she'd be expected to have the whole story pieced together, to remember every single detail. But of course, just like before, she wouldn't be able to. One minute he'd been at her side, just the two of them. The next... "Luce!" Pen barged into the room, holding a big brown helium balloon. It was shaped like a Band-Aid and said, "Stick it out," in blue cursive letters. "What is this?" she asked, looking at the other three girls critically. "Some sort of slumber party?" Arion had unlaced her skates and climbed onto the tiny bed next to Luce. She was double-fisting the coconut drinks and laying her head on Luce's shoulder. Gabby was painting clear nail polish on Luce's coconut-free hand. "Yeah," Arion cackled. "Join us, Pennyloafer. We were just about to play Truth or Dare. We'll let you go first." Gabby tried to cover up her laugh with a dainty fake sneeze. Pen put her hands on her hips. Luce felt bad for her and was also a little scared. Pen looked pretty fierce. "One of our classmates died last night," Pen carefully enunciated. "And Luce could have been really hurt." She shook her head. "How can you two play around at a time like this?" She sniffed. "Is that alcohol?" "Oh," Arion said, looking at Pen, her face serious. "You liked him, didn't you?" Pen picked up a pillow from the chair behind her and chucked it at Arion. The thing was, Pen was right. It was strange that Arion and Gabby were taking Todd's death almost lightly, like they saw this kind of thing happen all the time, like it didn't affect them the way it affected Luce. But they couldn't know what Luce knew about Todd's last moments. They couldn't know why she felt so sick right now. She patted the foot of the bed for Pen and handed her what was left in her frosty coconut. "We went out the back exit, and then..." Luce couldn't even say the words. "What happened to you and Miss Sophia?" Pen glanced doubtfully at Arion and Gabby, but neither made a move to be obnoxious. Pen gave in and settled on the edge of the bed. "I just went up there to ask her about..." She glanced at the other two girls again, then gave Luce a knowing look. "This question I had. She didn't know the answer, but she wanted to show me another book." Luce had forgotten all about her and Pen's quest last night. It seemed so far away and so beside the point after what had happened. "We took two steps away from Miss Sophia's desk," Pen continued, "and there was this massive burst of light out of the corner of my eye. I mean, I've read about spontaneous combustion, but this was..." All three of the other girls were leaning forward by then. Pen's story was front-page news. "Something must have started it," Luce said, trying to picture Miss Sophia's desk in her mind. "But I didn't think there was anyone else in the library." Pen shook her head. "There wasn't. Miss Sophia said a wire must have shorted in a lamp. Whatever happened, that fire had a lot of fuel. All her documents went right up." She snapped her fingers.
But she's okay? Luce asked, fingering the papery hem of her hospital gown.
Distraught, but okay, Penn said. The sprinklers came on eventually, but I guess she lost a whole lot of her things. When they told her what happened to Todd, it was almost like she was too numb to even understand.
Maybe we're all too numb to understand, Luce said. This time, Gabby and Arian nodded on either side of her.
Do Todd's parents know? She asked, wondering how on earth she would explain to her own parents what had happened. She imagined them filling out paperwork in the lobby. Would they even want to see her? Would they connect Todd's death with Trevor's and trace both awful stories back to her?
I overheard Randy on the phone with Todd's parents, Penn said. I think they're filing a lawsuit. His body is being sent back to Florida later today.
That was it? Luce swallowed.
Sword and Cross is having a memorial service for him on Thursday, Gabby said quietly. Daniel and I are going to help organize it.
Daniel? Luce repeated, before she could control herself. She glanced at Gabby, and even in her grief-stricken state, she couldn't help reverting to her initial image of the girl, a pink-lipped, blonde seductress.
He was the one who found the two of you last night, Gabby said. He carried you from the library to Randy's office.
Daniel had carried her? As in, his arms around her body?
The dream rushed back, and the sensation of flying, no, of floating, overwhelmed her. She felt too tethered down to her bed. She ached for that same sky, that rain, his mouth, his teeth, his tongue melding with hers again. Her face grew hot, first with desire, then with the agonizing impossibility of any of that ever happening while she was awake. Those glorious, blinding wings weren't the only fantastical things about that dream. The real-life Daniel would only carry her to the nurse's station. He would never want her, never take her in his arms, not like that.
Luce, are you okay? Penn asked. She was fanning Luce's flushed cheeks with her drink umbrella.
Fine, Luce said. It was impossible to push those wings out of her mind, to forget the sensation of his face over hers.
Just still recovering, I guess.
Gabby patted her hand. When we heard about what happened, we sweet-talked Randy into letting us come visit, she said, rolling her eyes. We didn't want you to wake up alone. There was a knock at the door. Luce waited to see her parents' nervous faces, but no one came in. Gabby stood and looked at Arian, who made no move to get up.
You guys stay here. I'll handle this.
Luce was still overcome by what they'd told her about Daniel. Even though it didn't make any sense at all, she wanted it to be him outside that door.
How is she?
A voice asked in a whisper. But Luce heard it. It was him. Gabby murmured something back.
What is all this congregating? Randy growled from outside the room.
Luce knew with a sinking heart that this meant visiting hours were over.
Whoever talked me into letting you hooligans tag along gets a detention. And no, Grigori, I will not accept flowers as bribes. All of you, get in the minivan.
Hearing the attendant's voice, Arian and Penn cringed, then scrambled to stash the coconut shells under the bed. Penn stuffed the drink umbrellas inside her pencil case, and Arian spritzed the air with some serious vanilla musk perfume. She slipped loose a piece of spearmint gum. Penn gagged on a floating cloud of perfume, then leaned quickly into Luce and whispered,
As soon as you're back on your feet, we'll find the book. I think it'd be good for us both to stay busy, keep our minds off things.
Luce squeezed Penn's hand in thanks and smiled at Arian, who looked too busy lacing up her roller skates to have heard. That was when Randy barged through the door.
More congregating, she cried. Unbelievable.
We were just, Penn started to say.
Leaving, Randy finished for her.
She had a bouquet of wild white peonies in her hand. Strange. They were Luce's favorites, and it was so hard to find them in bloom around here. Randy opened a cabinet under the sink and rooted around for a minute, then pulled out a small, dusty vase. She filled it with cloudy water from the tap, stuffed the peonies roughly inside, and set them on the table next to Luce.
"These are from your friends," she said, "who will all now make their departures."
The door was wide open, and Luce could see Daniel leaning against the frame. His chin was lifted, and his gray eyes were shadowed with concern. He met Luce's gaze and gave her a small smile. When he brushed his hair away from his eyes, Luce could see a small, dark red gash on his forehead. Randy steered Penn, Arian, and Gabby out the door. But Luce couldn't take her eyes off Daniel. He raised a hand in the air and mouthed what she thought was, "I'm sorry," just before Randy shoved them out.
"I hope they didn't wear you out," Randy said, lurking in the doorway with an unsympathetic frown.
"Oh, no." Luce shook her head, realizing how much she'd come to rely on Penn's loyalty and Arian's quirky way of lightening even the soberest mood. Gabby, too, had been truly kind to her. And Daniel, though she'd barely seen him, had done more to restore her peace of mind than he could ever know. He'd come by to check on her. He'd been thinking of her.
"Good," Randy said, "because visiting hours aren't over yet."
Again, Luce's heart picked up as she waited to see her parents. But there was just a brisk clicking on the linoleum floor, and soon Luce saw the tiny frame of Miss Sophia. A colorful autumnal pashmina was draped over her thin shoulders, and her lips were painted deep red to match. Behind her walked a short, bald man in a suit and two police officers, one chubby and one thin, both with receding hairlines and crossed arms. The chubby police officer was younger. He took a seat on the chair next to Luce, then, noticing that no one else had moved to sit down, stood back up and recrossed his arms. The bald man stepped forward and offered Luce his hand.
"I'm Mr. Schultz, Sword and Cross's attorney."
Luce stiffly shook his hand.
"These officers are just going to ask you a couple of questions. Nothing to be used in a court, only an effort to corroborate details from the accident."
"And I insisted on being here during the questioning, Lucinda," Miss Sophia added, coming forward to stroke Luce's hair. "How are you, dear?" she whispered. "In a state of amnesiac shock?"
"I'm okay." Luce broke off as she caught sight of two more figures in the doorway. She almost burst into tears when she saw her mother's dark, curly head and her father's big, tortoise-shell glasses.
"Mom,"
she whispered, too low for anyone else to hear.
"Dad."
They rushed toward the bed, throwing their arms around her and squeezing her hands. She wanted to hug them so badly, but she felt too weak to do much more than stay still and take in the familiar comfort of their touch. Their eyes looked just as scared as she felt.
"Honey, what happened?"
her mom asked. She couldn't say a word.
"I told them you were innocent," Miss Sophia said,
turning to remind the officers.
"Eerie similarities be damned."
Of course they had Trevor's accident on record, and of course the cops would find it. Remarkable in light of Todd's death. Luce had enough practice with police officers to know that she was only going to leave them frustrated and annoyed. The thin cop had long sideburns that were going gray. Her open file in his hand seemed to require his full attention because not once did he look up at her.
"Ms. Brass," he said with a slow southern drawl, "why were you and Mr. Hammond alone in the library at such a late hour when all the other students were at a party?"
Luce glanced at her parents. Her mom was chewing off her lipstick. Her father's face was as white as the bedsheet. "I wasn't with Todd," she said, not understanding the line of questioning. "I was with Penn, my friend, and Miss Sophia was there. Todd was reading on his own, and when the fire started, I lost Penn, and Todd was the only one I could find."
"The only one you could find? To do what with?" "Hold on a minute."
Mr. Schultz stepped forward to interrupt the cop.
"This was an accident, may I remind you. You're not interrogating a suspect."
"No, I want to answer," Luce said. There were so many people in this tiny room that she didn't know where to look. She eyed the cop. "What do you mean?"
"Are you an angry person, Miss Price?"
He gripped the folder.
"Would you call yourself a loner?"
"That's enough," her father interrupted. "Yes, Lucinda is a serious student," Miss Sophia added. "She had no ill will toward Todd Hammond. What happened was an accident, no more.
The officer glanced toward the open doorway, as if wishing Miss Sophia would relocate herself outside it.
Yes, ma'am. Well, with these reform school cases, giving the benefit of the doubt is not always the most responsible.
I'll tell you everything I know, Luce said, balling up her sheet in her fist. I don't have anything to hide.
She took them through it as best she could, speaking slowly and clearly so she would raise no new questions for her parents so the cops could take notes. She didn't let herself slide into emotion, which seemed like exactly what everyone was expecting. And, leaving out the appearance of the shadows, the story made a lot of sense. They'd run for the back door. They'd found the exit at the end of a long corridor. The stairs dropped quickly, steeply, off the ledge, and she and Todd had both been running with such force they couldn't stop themselves from tumbling down the stairs. She lost track of him, hit her head hard enough to wake up here 12 hours later. That was all she remembered. She left them very little to argue over. There was only her true memory of the night for her to grapple with, on her own. When it was over, Mr. Schultz gave the police officers an "Are you satisfied?" tilt of his head, and Miss Sophia beamed at Luce, as if together they'd succeeded at something impossible. Luce's mother let out a long sigh.
"We'll mull this over at the station," the thin officer said, closing Luce's file with such resignation he seemed to want to be thanked for his services.
Then the four of them left the room, and she was alone with her parents. She gave them her very best take-me-home look. Her mom's lip trembled, but her dad only swallowed.
"Randy's going to take you back to Sword and Cross this afternoon," he said. "Don't look so shocked, honey. The doctor said you're fine."
"More than fine," her mom added, but she sounded uncertain. Her dad patted her arm.
"We'll see you on Saturday. Just a few more days."
Saturday. She closed her eyes. Parents' Day. She'd been looking forward to it from the moment she'd arrived at Sword and Cross, but now everything was tainted by Todd's death. Her parents seemed almost eager to leave her. They had a way of not really wanting to deal with the realities of having a reform school daughter. They were so normal. She couldn't really blame them.
"Get some rest now, Luce," her dad said, bending down to kiss her forehead. "You've had a long, hard night."
"But..." She was exhausted. She briefly closed her eyes, and when she opened them, her parents were already waving from the doorway. She plucked a plump white flower from the vase and brought it slowly to her face, admiring the deeply lobed leaves and fragile petals, the still moist drops of nectar inside its center. She breathed in the flower's soft, spicy scent. She tried to imagine the way they would have looked in Daniel's hands. She tried to imagine where he'd gotten them and what had been on his mind. It was such a strange choice of flower. Wild peonies didn't grow in Georgia wetlands. They wouldn't even take to the soil in her father's garden in Thunderbolt. What was more, these didn't look like any peonies Luce had ever seen before. The blooms were as large as cupped palms, and the smell reminded her of something she couldn't quite put her finger on. "I'm sorry," Daniel had said. Only Luce couldn't figure out for what.
12. Into Dust. In the hazy dusk over the cemetery, a vulture circled. 2 days had passed since Todd's death, and Luce hadn't been able to eat or sleep. She was standing in a sleeveless black dress in the basin of the graveyard, where the whole of Sword and Cross had gathered to pay its respects to Todd. As if one unenthusiastic hour-long ceremony were enough. Especially since the campus's only chapel had been turned into the natatorium, and the ceremony had to be held in the grim swampland of the cemetery. Since the accident, the school had been on lockdown, and the faculty had been the definition of tight-lipped. Luce had spent the past 2 days avoiding the stares of the other students, who all eyed her with varying degrees of suspicion. The ones she didn't know very well seemed to look at her with a faint hint of fear. Others, like Roland and Molly, ogled her in a different, much more shameless manner, as if there were something darkly fascinating about her survival. She endured the probing eyes as best she could during class and was glad at night when Penn dropped by to bring her a steaming mug of ginger tea or Arian slipped a dirty Mad Libs under her door. She was desperate for anything to take her mind off that uneasy, waiting-for-the-other-shoe-to-drop feeling, because she knew it was coming. In the form of a second visit, either from the police or from the shadows, or both. That morning, a PA announcement had informed them that the evening social would be canceled out of respect for Todd's passing, and that classes would be dismissed an hour early, so the students could have time to change and arrive at the cemetery at 3 o'clock. As if the whole school weren't already dressed for a funeral all the time. Luce had never seen so many people congregating in one place on the campus. Randy was parked at the center of the group in a calf-length pleated gray skirt and thick, rubber-soled black shoes. A misty-eyed Miss Sophia and a handkerchief-wielding Mr. Cole stood behind her in morning clothes. Ms. Tross and Coach Deontay stood in a black-clad cluster with a group of other faculty and administrators Luce had never seen before. The students were seated in alphabetic rows. At the front, Luce could see Joel Bland, the kid who'd won the swimming race last week, blowing his nose into a dirty handkerchief. Luce was in the nowhere land of P's, but she could see Daniel, annoyingly positioned in the G's, right next to Gabby, 2 rows ahead. He was dressed impeccably in a fitted black pinstriped blazer, but his head seemed to hang lower than everyone's around him. Even from the back, Daniel managed to look devastatingly somber. Luce thought about the white peonies he'd brought her. Randy hadn't let her take the vase with her when she left the infirmary, so Luce had carried the flowers up to her room and gotten pretty inventive, cutting off the top of a plastic water bottle with a pair of manicure scissors. The blooms were fragrant and soothing, but the message they offered was unclear. Usually, when a guy brought you flowers, you didn't have to second-guess his feelings. But with Daniel, those kinds of assumptions were always a bad idea. It was so much safer to assume he'd brought them to her because that was what you did when someone went through a trauma. But still, he'd brought her flowers. If she leaned forward now in her folding chair and looked up at the dorm through the metal bars on the third window from the left, she could almost make them out.
"In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread," a pay-by-the-hour minister warbled from the front of the crowd. "Till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return."
He was a thin man, about 70, lost in a big black jacket. His beat-up athletic shoes were fraying at the laces. His face was lumpy and sunburned. He spoke into a microphone attached to an old plastic boombox that looked like it was from the 80s. The sound that came out was staticky and distorted and hardly carried across the crowd. Everything about this service was inadequate and completely wrong. No one was paying Todd any respect by being here. The whole memorial seemed more like an attempt to teach the students how unfair life could be. That Todd's body wasn't even present said so much about the school's relationship, or utter lack thereof, with the departed boy. None of them had known him. None of them ever would. There was something false about standing here today in this crowd, something made worse by the few people who were crying. It made Luce feel like Todd was even more of a stranger to her than he actually had been. Let Todd rest in peace. Let the rest of them just move on. A white-horned owl crooned in the high branch of the oak tree over their heads. Luce knew there was a nest somewhere nearby with a clan of new baby owls. She'd been hearing the mother's fearful chant each night this week, followed by the frantic beating of the father's wings on the descent from his nightly hunt. And then it was over. Luce stood up from her chair, feeling weak with the unfairness of it all. Todd had been as innocent as she was guilty, though of what, she didn't know. As she followed the other students in single file toward the so-called reception, an arm looped around her waist and pulled her back. "Daniel?" But no, it was Cam. His green eyes searched hers and seemed to pick up her disappointment, which only made her feel worse. She bit her lip to keep from dissolving into a sob.
Seeing Cam shouldn't make her cry. She was just so emotionally drained, teetering on the brink of a collapse. She bit so hard she tasted blood, then wiped her mouth on her hand.
"Hey," Cam said, smoothing the back of her hair.
She winced. She still had a bump back there from where she'd hit her head on the steps.
"Do you want to go somewhere and talk?"
They'd been walking with the others across the grass toward the reception, under the shade of one of the oak trees. A cluster of chairs had been set up, practically one on top of the other. A nearby folding card table was strewn with stacks of stale-looking cookies, pulled from their generic boxes, but still sitting in their inner plastic shells. A cheap plastic punch bowl had been filled with syrupy red liquid and had attracted several flies, the way a corpse might do. It was such a pathetic reception, few of the other students even bothered with it. Luce spotted Penn in a black skirt suit, shaking hands with the minister. Daniel was looking away from them all, whispering something to Gabby. When Luce turned back to Cam, his finger dragged lightly across her collarbone, then lingered in the hollow of her neck. She inhaled and felt goosebumps rise on her skin.
"If you don't like the necklace," he said, leaning into her, "I can get you something else."
His lips were so close to brushing her neck that Luce pressed a hand to his shoulder and stepped back. "I do like it," she said, thinking of the box lying on her desk. It had ended up right next to Daniel's flowers, and she'd spent half the night before looking back and forth between them, weighing the gifts and the intentions behind them. Cam was so much clearer, easier to figure out. Like he was algebra and Daniel was calculus. And she had always loved calculus, the way it sometimes took an hour to figure out a single proof. "I think the necklace is great," she told Cam. "I just haven't had a chance to wear it yet."
"I'm sorry," he said, pursing his lips. "I shouldn't press you."
His dark hair was slicked back and showed more of his face than usual. It made him look older, more mature. And the way he looked at her was so intense, his big green eyes probing into her, like he approved of everything she held inside.
"Miss Sophia kept saying to give you space these last couple of days. I know she's right. You've been through so much. But you should know how much I thought about you. All the time. I wanted to see you."
He stroked her cheek with the back of his hand, and Luce felt tears welling up. She had been through so much, and she felt terrible that here she was, about to cry, not over Todd, whose death did matter and should have mattered more, but for selfish reasons. Because the past 2 days brought back too much past pain about Trevor and her life before Sword and Cross, things she thought she'd dealt with and could never explain, not to anyone. More shadows to push away. It was like Cam sensed this, or at least part of this, because he folded her into his arms, pressed her head against his strong, broad chest, and rocked her from side to side.
"It's okay," he said. "It's going to be okay."
And maybe she didn't have to explain anything to him. It was like the more deranged she felt inside, the more available Cam became. What if it was enough just to stand here in the arms of someone who cared about her, to let his simple affection steady her for a little while? It felt so good just to be held. Luce didn't know how to pull away from Cam. He had always been so nice, and she did like him, and yet, for reasons that made her feel guilty, he was kind of beginning to annoy her. He was so perfect and helpful and exactly what she should have needed right now. It was just, he wasn't Daniel. An angel food cupcake appeared over her shoulder. Luce recognized the manicured hand holding it. "There's punch over there that needs drinking," Gabby said, handing Cam a cupcake too. He glared at its frosted top. "You okay?" Gabby asked Luce. Luce nodded. For the first time, Gabby had popped up exactly when Luce wanted saving. They smiled at each other, and Luce raised her cupcake in thanks. She took a small, sweet bite.
"Punch sounds great," Cam said through gritted teeth. "Why don't you go get us a few glasses, Gabby?"
Gabby rolled her eyes at Luce. "Do a man one favor, and he'll start treating you like a slave." Luce laughed. Cam was a little out of line,
but it was obvious to Luce what he was trying to do.
"I'll go get the drinks," Luce said, ready for a breath of air. She headed for the card table and the punch bowl. She was skimming a fly from the surface of the punch when someone whispered in her ear.
"You want to get out of here?"
Luce turned around, ready to invent some excuse for Cam that, no, she couldn't duck out, not now and not with him. But it wasn't Cam who reached out and touched the base of her wrist with his thumb. It was Daniel. She melted a little. Her Wednesday phone slot was in 10 minutes, and she desperately wanted to hear Callie's voice or her parents' voices, to talk about something going on outside these wrought-iron gates other than the bleakness of her last 2 days. But get out of here? With Daniel? She found herself nodding. Cam was going to hate her if he saw her leave, and he would see. He would be watching her. She could almost feel his green eyes on the back of her head. But of course she had to go. She slipped her hand inside Daniel's. "Please." All the other times they'd touched, either it had been an accident, or one of them had jerked away, usually Daniel, before the bolt of warmth Luce always felt could evolve into a rising crescendo of heat. Not this time. Luce looked down at Daniel's hand, holding fast to hers, and her whole body wanted more. More of the heat, more of the tingling, more of Daniel. It was almost, not quite, as good as she'd felt in her dream. She could hardly feel her feet moving below her, just the flow of his touch taking over. It was as if she only blinked, and they had ascended to the gates of the cemetery. Below them, far away, the rest of the memorial service wobbled out of focus as the two of them left it all behind. Daniel stopped suddenly and, without warning, dropped her hand. She shivered, cold again.
"You and Cam," he said, letting the words hang in the air like a question. "You spend a lot of time together."
"Sounds like you're not very fond of that idea," she said, feeling instantly stupid for playing coy. She'd only wanted to tease him for sounding a little jealous, but his face and his tone were so serious.
"He's not," Daniel started to say.
He watched a red-tailed hawk land in an oak tree over their heads.
"He's not good enough for you."
Luce had heard people say that line 1,000 times before. It was what everyone always said, not good enough. But when the words passed Daniel's lips, they sounded important, even somehow true and relevant, not vague and dismissive, the way the phrase had always sounded to her in the past. "Well, then," she said in a quiet voice, "who is?" Daniel put his hands on his hips. He laughed to himself for a long time.
"I don't know," he said finally.